Good morning. Today is Friday, May the 26th. Joining us this morning, yet another guy breaking free from Humboldt. Cyril Oberlander. Good morning, sir.
It's great to be here.
You think, huh?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, wait till the games begin.
Okay.
Now, what area are you responsible for?
I'm currently responsible for the library. I'm the library dean. I'm also serving as the interim dean for the College of Extended Education and Global Engagement.
Global engagement. Does that mean like Zoom classes and virtual classes and that stuff?
It actually means international students that are coming here and our students that are going studying abroad. So we have some students in Belize right now.
Talk about a tough draw.
It's amazing.
And they can live there on the student's income, too, rather comfortably for a while.
Probably there's a different cost of living. Absolutely.
You haven't done enough research. Ah, library pun. Sorry, guys.
I love it.
It doesn't go particularly deep in that category. Did Jen warn you about this at all?
Not at all.
Okay. So we are loaded for why do we say that? Why do we use the phrase get a rise, and like get a rise out of somebody?
Probably because folks like to amp things up sometimes. So tell me what.
So you're thinking it's an audio thing?
No. It's trying to get folks to be either have anxiety or asking them a question that they're not prepared for. It could be all about that.
All right. I saw that table start to turn. Oh. Sometimes a casual comment will get a rise from a listener. A quick retort may run the gamut, from minor vexation to high-level indignation. Whatever the response, if it's accompanied by a reddening of the face and neck, you might be sure to have hit a tender spot. But you don't have to be fishing for a heated comeback in order to get one. It can be triggered by a perfectly innocent remark. Yeah, don't we all know that? Rapidity of response is such a situation and is similar to a hungry fish rising to the bait. A human whose emotions are aroused by a sentence or a phrase or even a single word rises to it like a bass going for a fly.
I knew this would be an educational moment. Thank you.
Yeah, huh? Oh, okay. We'll work with it. We'll work with it. So library science, I think most of us, hopefully, at least at the high school level, had libraries.
Had
high school libraries. If we haven't been there in a while, things have changed significantly. I still think one of the coolest things, absolutely coolest things I've ever run into, and I think most folks listening know I'm a baseball card geek. This was in Berkeley about 30 years ago, and the business is either relocated or is no longer there. Had an old card catalog with the pull-out drawers, and every drawer had 1 year's worth of cards inside of it. It was labeled who the manufacturer was and what the year was. I thought, what a great repurposing of something that everybody knows, and you don't have to even explain how to utilize it. My understanding is library is a little bit different now. The card catalog may exist or may not exist. What's the biggest change in libraries, say in the last 20 years?
Excellent question. We still have card catalogs, but they're far smaller than they used to be. We still have 500,000 books, so if you read one a day, it's 1,300 years of fun, so start early. But what everybody has been wanting out of libraries...
Evelyn Wood, baby.
is that basically we are wanting to be the traditional part of the library, which is the books, the quiet study, and we want more. So a lot of people want it to be a technology place, a place of creativity, the makerspace. So what libraries have been doing over the last 20 years has been stretching to accommodate both. And what you'll see is that at the library today, and please come visit, we're open to everybody, is that you'll see the books, you'll see the study areas, but you'll also see a flight simulator, a dissection table, an augmented reality sandbox.
Wait, a dissection table. Now, we all had wishes of doing that to certain faculty members, but this is a real deal?
It's a real deal, but it's imagine that if you wanted to explore dissecting a human, or four of them, in fact, and 150 animals and three mummies, you can do that in the library because the book was one of the first immersive technologies. And so the digital dissection table is just another form of immersive technology.
Four, you could be like a serial killer then.
Well, I think it's
probably not how
learning.
You try to position it, huh?
From my point of view, you can learn the most amazing things. Like, I didn't know the lymphatic system was throughout the body. I thought it was pretty much around the neck until I was exploring the dissection table.
You haven't had a buddy deal with lymphatic cancer.
No, that'd be sad. Super sad.
Yeah, yeah. But at least it gives you an opportunity to see some of that stuff instead of being in the doctor's office with those goofy charts on the wall.
Exactly.
Flight simulator. Now, I've heard from folks that it gives you a pretty good impression. It ain't the top of the line, but it does a pretty good job for most of us that, you know, we're never going to be behind, being the number one chair anyway.
Well, if you like flight simulators or learning to fly, students at Cal Poly Humboldt built the flight simulator, and it's been running for years now excellently. And this month, we're going to get a brand new FAA-certified flight simulator. So if you want to see yourself in a two-seater with six monitors and moving around because it's got digital actuators, you too can learn how to fly. And this will clock hours for your renewal of license or your first certification.
See how bad the crash would really look?
Oh,
does it come included with ambulances and fire trucks?
That's an accessory.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that is intriguing as all get out. I've early on, I was born in 60. So I was one of the kids, and it was astronauts, right? I still have got that stunned and amazed. I don't know if they have flight simulators for rocket ships or riding a Saturn. Five, but man, I would like to think that there would be a line out the front door of the library, and everybody would be paying their $100 to sit in it. That kind of that virtual stuff is just so advanced now.
It is, and that's part of what we do. We're building a three-dimensional digital herbarium based on what we learned from the dissection table.
Good. We'll talk about what herbs we can grow virtually when we come back. It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, $4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Sorrel Oberlander, who's in charge of the library and a couple of other things temporary up at Humboldt. That kind of suffice?
That works perfectly.
All right, all right. And he doesn't really know who he is, so he's always walking around with his own name tag on.
That way, if I get lost, people can direct me.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Glad you're not relying on GPS.
No, but I do use a lot of Google Maps, and I just took pictures of your place out here to put it on Google Maps.
What is your confidence level, Sorrel, with some of this, I'll just say, new world technology, you know, whether it's Wikipedia or some of these other things that are out there? Everybody hears stories and reads things that just don't make sense. And then then there's this stuff like with Twitter. I guess this morning, was it this morning? That was it DeSantis and Musk were doing something together?
Yesterday's
and,
announcement.
Yeah, and boom, it's off. Yeah. And it's like the selectiveness. I mean, all those things all add to this concern that a lot of us have about the new technologies and that whole arena. From your perspective, are those assistants? Are those starting points? Have they made your services with in libraries and a formal research more apt to get funding or less apt? I mean, what has it done to your landscape?
I would say both. I would say that the libraries that faced Google and Wikipedia early on didn't know what to do with it. So initially they said, don't use it. But we learned to actually say, let's co-op what these offer as their strengths. So we'd say, hey, we can teach you about Wikipedia by asking you to edit Wikipedia and learning how easy it is and to think about the kind of resource it is so that it changes the way you think about the environment you're in. Same with Google. Currently,
so like vetting sources?
Vetting sources. So our special collections librarian, Carly Marino, has done a Wikipedia edit-a-thon. Kimberly Stelter has done one with art so that students introduce better resources into Wikipedia, but they also then understand that anybody can edit Wikipedia.
Yeah, the flexibility, I guess, would be a word.
Exactly.
So do they have higher confidence? Or are they kind of protecting their own turf once they get in what they think is right, so somebody, some goofball like me doesn't come in and make some comments that are just totally not accurate?
Thankfully, there are reviewers that'll take care of everybody who wants to do something a little bit off kilter. But yeah, there is a lot of confidence in these forms of social learning or social publishing. And I think what's really helpful is you see some things work, like Wikipedia actually works. Encyclopedia Britannica no longer is as relevant in a lot of what people think of as an encyclopedia. Wikipedia,
because
though,
of the latency?
Actually, because it really made a lot of sense in the print world. Speaking to the print world,
sure.
There are some people who love print, but they can't afford the marketplace of print. That they couldn't continue on the same way. Wikipedia meets all learners everywhere, and that's its exciting environment.
Unless you're tactile.
Unless you're tactile. And that's why when we publish, our library as a publisher, we published 600 authored works last year, thanks to the press at Cal Poly Humboldt. Our goal is every student publish, but they publish online for free, and they print. The print is available on Amazon. So that everybody has the best of their preference.
Does every student graduating have something worthy of, I mean, when you say print, I'm thinking of the Vanity Press.
Yeah, good question.
A couple thousand dollars, and then does anybody care about it? You know, I mean, not a master's thesis that is totally different road.
I would say every student's voice matters, and the reality is how do we cultivate their voice to be able to be published in the form they want it? An artist, it'll be an art form.
Oh, that's logical.
Yeah, and then the challenge becomes, how do you make it more available publicly? Radio is a great example. You bring the voice to a lot of listeners through AM. That is fantastic. For folks who write a poster, for example, presented at Idea Fest in the library, which, by the way, you're all invited May 5th usually, music, dance, a whole bunch of things. But posters are fantastic at encapsulating someone's research and providing a context to something that is explored. So publish the poster and it becomes an authored work. If it's a poster that never goes anywhere else, nobody sees it. But we have journals, books, videos. We publish a lot of work because it depends on the discipline and the student's motivation.
Silly me. I did not think publish had multiple definitions. Of course it has multiple definitions. So they're not all vignettes or 250-page novels or here's what I learned at Humboldt.
Exactly.
Snooze.
Exactly.
Okay.
We really want to celebrate what is the learning at the campus. And so Idea Fest is a celebration every year, but the publication represents something that interacts with the world. And to be quite honest, when a student author's work and it's in print and they're reading it, the audience is in tears at a public reading because they see the student transformed as an author. And when we make learning impactful and real world, that's the difference we want to make.
And personal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30. We'll be back with more from Cyril Oberlander.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning with Cyril Oberlander from Cal Poly Humboldt. I figured I'd give you a full pump. I mean, since you're wearing the gear, I might as well at least one time do that.
Yay, Cal Poly Humboldt.
I know this sounds bizarre, but it's outside of the bottle looking into the bottle rather than inside the bottle looking out.
Okay.
Can the community come into the library?
Absolutely.
And use and check out and do all that kind of stuff as a public library rather than as a research tool for student body?
Well, we're technically not a public library. That is, the Humboldt County Public Library is an amazing resource, and I hope folks use it because
it's just because they have copper gutters.
Yeah. Actually, they have great
services. Some of us remember these things.
Shoshone,
yeah.
And everybody, they do great work. But we are open to the public. And a lot of the folks that come into the library have different reasons for coming in the library. So there's actually some folks who love the special collections, the historical materials, the images, the maps. Everything about special collections is very available to folks. They do consulting hours, so that you want to work with them for when you can access it.
That means the doors are closed sometimes?
Sometimes there's open sometimes, yeah. And if you want to make a research appointment, that works really well. But the library itself is open. A lot of people use it for Wi-Fi. So we actually have some folks who have...
Oh, really? Just a public spot?
Right. Public spot. They use Wi-Fi. They do their businesses even there. So there's a couple people that I know that actually it's their platform for their office, but it's just something that everybody has a different purpose. Some people love the reading, so they'll go in the stacks and they'll ask me for make sure that I have a soft reading chair. And so the public,
wait a minute, you don't have the sofas and all the chairs that we used to hang out and sleep and disappear into?
We have still some sofas, but you know those reading back chairs, those high back chairs that are for reading?
You mean like the ones that are in the bars when you don't want to be seen by somebody?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So folks have asked
Oh, you know
those,
about those.
And so the nice thing is we wanted to actually make sure that we offer the types of seating that people want. So the community is welcome to the library, and they should come and explore all the floors because they'll find that we've changed a bit and we have some really exciting things to show.
I would suspect that this time of the year is probably the least utilized, so you can really kind of wander around and not worry about, you know, if there's lines in different places and that kind of stuff.
It certainly changes the landscape because there are fewer students. There's a robust summer session. But during this time, we offer lifelong learning lounge at the library for free. So everybody is welcome to learn whatever they want. There's everything from Dungeons and Dragons to virtual fantasy football to Google Maps and so much more. And that way, everybody has a chance to get together because we believe that if you learn together, social learning, you actually are stronger and you have more of a network to work with in the future.
I thought you were going to say from Dungeons and Dragons to Dungeness Crab. It was. I was going to be so impressed, and then you just took a left-hand turn.
I'm trying to figure out how to put the crab in there. But no.
Crab goes with everything.
As long as it's with butter, yes.
No. You're a butter guy, huh? Well, it's better than mayonnaise. I'm the crab sauce.
Okay.
Got to have that little tang to it. If somebody hasn't been there for a while, or maybe went to school 15 years ago.
Right.
Biggest change?
They'll see a cafe on the first floor, and that surprises people.
Food?
Because the reality is, in the past, in libraries, you could smoke, but you couldn't eat. Now it's the opposite. You can eat, but you can't smoke.
That's interesting. With all the computers that are around, I would have thought that the food would have been, and drink would be verboten.
No, if people are going to be comfortable learning and studying and collaborating, they should have food and coffee. And in fact, we have a espresso machine that gives, I always say, the best $2 cappuccino around. And I actually mean it's good. It's locally brewed kinetic coffee, and it's wonderful.
Oh, I better make a quick note. I don't want to say it on air. The upper floors used to be where the more serious studying was going on. Once you got past the newspapers, which I suppose are now in the archives somewhere. Or do you actually still have the Post with the print?
We still
the Times
have the
and
Post
the
with some of
Wall
the
Street
print
Journal
newspapers.
And, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Two-thirds of the library is now collaborative space. And so that's...
Does that mean where you talk inside the library?
Yes, you talk. A lot of the quiet study is behind the books. The biggest change that I've seen technology-wise that has transformed the library is actually mobile whiteboards. We have over 100 mobile whiteboards, 170 in fact. And what that did is we saw, because we measure where people sit in the library every year for 2 weeks, most people used to study by themselves. And
right.
After we added the mobile whiteboards, most of the people studied in groups. And that was the biggest change we saw in the library recently, besides all the technology and besides all the flight simulator and everything.
But small group gatherings.
Exactly. Group work actually makes a lot of sense.
So for some of us who don't have kids, grandkids going to school, a whiteboard, when you say whiteboard, I think of like the grease board, the one with the felt pins, and you write on it. That's probably not going to get people talking and really excited because you had those big Post-it notes before. So what do these whiteboards bring to the table that the others didn't, that have really changed the dynamic of the library?
Excellent question. When people are writing in a group, what they're doing is confirming what they're saying. So when we talk, you and I, what often happens is we come away with different ideas of what we said. And the reality is once it's written in front of us, we each have the same ideas of the same thing we just talked about. And that has transformed the way learning happens.
And probably a little bit of penmanship.
And artistry.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. The doodles. Yeah. Doodle for everybody, for
every,
the group.
Every discipline is represented.
Well, hopefully not biology. You don't want too much blood on those things. Yeah, from the robust discussions that occur. KINS, News and Information Time, is 8:42. Yeah, I guess I'm back.
That is such a new technique.
Oh, we'll be back with more from...
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75. For a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Cyril Oberlander from Cal Poly Humboldt in the library, et cetera. the et cetera part. I mean, the exchange program. Well, okay, whatever. Yeah.
The great Ollie program, cool. Lifelong learning. Yeah, it's everything. It's so amazing.
One of the things, when I was there, there was really a true feeling of town and gown, the battle. There wasn't a recognition, really. It was more of an attitude that you need us more than we need you kind of thing. We broke that down a little bit with basketball, and I know the football program in the 60s did it. But by and large, there was very little interaction unless you happened to be engaged with Center Arts. And other than that, you know, or your kid was going to school, or you happened to be a teacher, or were married to one. I don't get a sense that that exists anymore. And maybe it's because Jen has been wearing me down, and some of the others also, and the new president. But it seems like there's a willingness for engagement, which is different. Is that an overt effort? Do you have that sense that that's the driving force?
I think the values that I see in the administration and in the staff and faculty are that we are engaged, we are committed to engaging in the community because we are the community. And so a good example is libraries exist if they have shifted towards an engagement strategy. I was explaining earlier to you that the library has thousands of events in the library, and that's part of a cultivation of connecting people, building community. And our president is very eager for us to be out and about in the chambers of commerce, in the business community, understanding the business, the local business, but connecting with the nonprofits too. So yeah, I think it's a value that is pervasive in the community. Some it's around the business, it's around the diversity elements, so there are many topics of connection. And I think you're seeing a stronger conversation for sure.
Well, yeah. Not hiding on the hill.
Oh gosh, no.
But in the past, you know, and to me, this was the most reprehensible of what was. I mean, it was true, but the attitude that accompanied it, that in Humboldt County, most of the people employed at Humboldt were upper class.
The ivory tower of higher ed is changing. And the reason is we have to be open to the community and we have to be connected to the world. And that is one of the best thing that's happening, I think, to universities.
Yeah, to me, ivory tower is kind of cool because that means you have the opportunity to do things uninterrupted. The attitude that often accompanies it and the arrogance.
Right.
I'll kneecap you. So on one hand, it's really neat. And on the other hand, depending on who the individual personality is, it's like you better not walk slow in the crosswalk. I mean, it really got that repulsive for an awful lot of us because, yeah, you're part of the community, but we want you to be part of the culture too.
Right.
And that was different. And now I don't sense that.
Great.
I mean, and maybe it's because I'm sympathetic or you're hiding better. You know, camouflage is
we have converted you.
Yeah. Whatever it is, but I don't hear people talking about it the way that they used to. And that, to me, is the real authentic sign of change.
I appreciate that very much. I think we all have worked hard to be more connected and engaged. And I'd like your point about it's a cultural thing.
Yeah, yeah. So what is next year going to do other than bringing more Cal Poly-type kids into town that may have been going elsewhere?
You know, the wonderful thing about the Cal Poly thing and next year is that there will be more students again, not nearly as many as like 2014. It's growing. But we're also going to be bringing some construction workers to build the housing that's around here. So a lot of these things are bringing a diverse population to Arcata and to the area to build our version of, okay, what does it look like to be a Cal Poly ahead? And it's a bright future because it's being shaped by conversations with the community. The community has concerns. They raise them. We're working with them. but also they're trying to figure out, what do we want to be? And you see that in the discussions of the wind farm, the fish farm, all of this. It's trying to figure out what makes sense for our community. And I think that's a good conversation to have.
I don't think we've figured it out. I can remember seeing headlines. Grandpa was going to run for mayor in the early 60s. Same discussions. 60 years later, it's the same. But it's neat because my sense is now there is a change because there's an economic motor that isn't marijuana.
Right.
That is of the future. And that, instead of just beating each other up, now we're beating each other up because there is a prize. There is a carrot out there. Yeah. And how we formulate the future will be really intriguing. I hope I'm around long enough to see some of the stuff.
Well said.
The age thing? For the future. Yeah, okay, fine.
The future.
There we go. All right. See everybody on Monday.